Okay, so basically a little bit about myself, first of all. So I've been rowing since, I think, officially said 1982, wasn't it? I think we were checking back when I first started rowing and got involved in rowing in London through in a London Education Authority scheme, that kind of thing. A bit like Go Row Now, I guess, back in the 80s. And then since then, I've kind of been coached by various people, very good coaches, some not so good coaches. Had lots of different training philosophies given to me over the years. And it's the old saying, isn't it, that I wish I knew now what I did when 30 years ago when I was rowing properly. I'm sure I would have been a lot quicker, but you know, that's the way it is. And now my plan is to try and tell other people how I believe it should be done through researching different physiological papers and reading books and talking to coaches and my experiences. And as myself, I mean, currently now work as a personal trainer, and I've been a personal trainer on and off probably for about 20 years, doing other things in between. So having that experience of the personal training field, strength and conditioning coaching, exercise physiology, together with my rowing knowledge, has kind of got me to a point now, and it's forever evolving. So what I'm saying today is what I believe the latest research is correct and saying. And I kind of test myself as well. So I mean, I'm 50 now, so I'm trying to, it's longevity, it's all about longevity from here now. And I think most people are kind of looking at longevity of rowing rather than trying to hit personal bests at the moment that they maybe hit when they're 20s and 30s. So with that in mind, it's kind of about training smart and being a bit more clever with your training. So that's where I've got to where I am today. And I would say that my philosophy on training does change all the time. Like, we're forever trying to row better, get better technique. You know, recent years, how do we approach the back end? Is it the pause at the back end? Is it fast hands? How we're all taught? How do we approach the catch? You know, the drive through. Everything's evolving all the time. So as our training philosophies, and I'm sure what I stand here and tell you now, is going to be completely different to when I was, what I'll be saying in about 5 years time, because things are evolving and we're getting new research coming through from exercise physiologists and researchers. Research happens. So anyway, first of all, do you guys, and the question I want to throw out to any of you guys is, do you guys, any of you, have a periodization? Do you know what that is? You're familiar with periodization of training? Some are, some aren't. Okay, so when you guys start training September, October for the season, do you have a set goal? Like, do you want to just row socially, or do you want to go to the Nationals or Henley Vets or the World Masters? Are there different goals in between?
Yeah. There's two main inflection points. So we've got the Vesta Vets at the end of the winter season, and then World Masters at the end of the summer. So
okay.
Those are the two sort of, and there's bits in between. You know, the things that we do on the way to those.
So like small heads and
heads
other things.
On the way, yeah.
Okay. So with that in mind, at the beginning of the year, you really need to plan your year with a set goal. So, for example, if I was competing now, I would say for me, my set goal would be the World Masters in September in Linz. And I think, okay, September the 2nd to the 6th, I think it is Linz in Austria. That's my goal. I count back. So from that, I count back, and this all relates to about training smart. I do a set block of periodization training, which will focus on the race planning. Then there'll be a set maybe on lactate tolerance. And I'll talk all about this in a bit. Set on strength, set on aerobic endurance. And it would all be done periodically through the year. So then I come to my peak and I hit my peak. So when I race in Nottingham at Nat Champs or I race at Henley Vets, the plan is that I will be quick and competitive there, but I will be peaking in September, because you can't hold a peak for the whole year round. And we'll talk about the grey zone in a bit. So that's kind of, first of all, you need to set out your goals. You do need to set out your goals, and they need to be crystal clear. And from that, we're going to talk a little bit about nutrition and about recovery, because as we get older, recovery is really important. And even for the younger guys, recovery is everything. I'm looking at you over there. Not at you, Joe. I'm not looking at you.
Relative though, isn't it? Very young.
He is looking a lot younger though, isn't
he?
Yeah. 31
just about. So, okay. So, This talk's going to be nothing about techniques. I don't know about how you row, and you know there are different ways, in my opinion, physiologically and technically, about how you make a boat go fast. You can use it, and I have a particular way. And I know Austin's talked about technique and about you going out there and doing your technical things. So nothing to do with technique. This chat, it's all about physiology, because you've got a coach, you're working technically with them, and that's fine. And there are different ways of moving a boat. I've moved a boat in some crate. I mean, look back at some of the stuff that I used to do. Think, how on earth did I get across the line? You know, there are ways of doing it. Anyhow, okay. So the first thing we're going to move on to is we're a little bit off the mark here, but don't worry, we can kind of get to it. Is your VO2 max. Okay, does anyone know what VO2 max is?
It's
based on the past.
Oxygen capacity.
Maximum oxygen update. Okay, so for it's measured in litres per minute. It's how many litres per minute you get in your body, oxygen, to energise your muscles, to be able to perform at a high level. So, it's the nasty stuff. It's the stuff that nobody likes really doing. We all like to go out and do steady state and technical paddles, don't we? You know, that nice comfort zone, which we'll talk about in a bit. And I'm sure aerobically you're all amazingly fit, but maybe anaerobically. And when I say anaerobically, I mean anything that's over, that starts to accumulate lactic acid. So I'm not talking about a sprint. This is zone 5, by the way, training. There are 6 zones. Zone 1 is people walking along and a nice Sunday walk. Zone 6 is when you're doing a 100-meter sprint. So we don't really talk about zone 1 or 6 in Rome, because we don't use them. Zone 6, we don't do a sprint. It's purely the glycolytic system, which we'll talk about in a bit. Anyway, so it's zone 5 training. TR, transportation, anyone heard of that? Yeah, we called that before. So you know TR. So it's been called aerobic capacity, VO2 max, lots of things. It's the system you're using when you're racing 2,000 metres or 1,000 metres on the water or 2,000 metres on an ergo. This is the nasty stuff. So it's where you're starting to produce lactic acid waste from the muscles being used, because they're using it at such a high rate. The waste product's lactic acid. You start getting that burning sensation. So a way to find your maximum heart rate. So this is really important, zone 5. And this is the kind of stuff that we do all year round, but we do more so as you approach your goal. The way to get your aerobic capacity, there are several different ways. For rowers, the best ways are, you can do a 2,000 metre test. This 2,000 metre test, I did this kind of chat, similar chat to some sort of under 23s, and that's fine because they do 2,000 metres in 6 minutes. We don't really do that these days. So 5-minute test is a good way of finding your VO2 max, okay, on an ergo. So you do a 5-minute test, and I'll talk about how you do about that in a minute. To measure your maximum oxygen uptake, it's really important you find out what your maximum heart rate is, because it changes every year. The 220 minus your age is not necessarily true. Okay, it works a treat for me. I mean, I'm 50, so my maximum heart rate is 220 minus age, should be 117. It's actually 173, so it's more or less there. But then one of my mates is the same age as me. When we're on a rowing machine, his heart rate goes over 200. So, it's genetically done. So 5-minute test, and I've just put here, so maximum oxygen to convert the energy from food into energy molecules called ATP. I don't want to go back to O-level biology, or it's called GCSE biology here, but that's how you make your energy in order to produce, get the muscles working. Your VO2 max training is 5 to 15 minutes of duration. So it's not a lot of, 10-15 minute warm-up and 10-15 minute cool-down plus your stretching. But it's 5 to 15 minutes duration. Okay, so for example, a VO2 max session would be something like 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, times 30. Absolute beast of a session. I did it the other day. My heart rate was around 170, 171 on some of those pieces. I'm near maximum. It's really, really not pleasant. The other ones are things like 5-3 minutes. With 3 minutes rest, you have equal recovery. So you do 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off. Another one's 4 minutes on, 4 minutes off. With people that start doing it, I tend to put them in the 5 minutes. So we do like 10, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, that kind of, and then you build up to like 15 minutes duration. Does that all make sense so far? Have I lost anyone?
Sorry, just a quick question. I'm not part of this. I'm trying not to butt in, but is there a lost property box here? I left my glasses here yesterday.
They're downstairs in the gym.
Are they?
Just by the, where the flash drives are.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
Carry on.
No, thank you, sir. Thank you. Any other questions?
My car won't start.
Now, okay.
Are you saying that this is part of that program?
Yeah, so this is where I'm going with this, and the reason I'm talking about aerobic capacity, and I'm going back to front, so I'm talking about the high end training first, and we're going back to what you guys probably do all the time, which is the aerobic or grey zone aerobic training area. But I want to start with this first, because in order for you to set your training program out, you need your maximum heart rate. You need to know what you're training at. So you need to buy a Garmin or a Polar heart rate monitor. You know, the straps you put on, and you've got a watch, and it measures your heart rate, or you can do it now on a boat through. You can do it an app on your phone, whatever it is. All your training now should be geared towards heart rate, and that's how you train smartly. Because otherwise, you can now train too hard, and burning out, or not training hard enough, and getting the biggest adaptations that you can get.
So we're always doing a circuit session every Wednesday night, where we're doing 40 seconds on, 20 seconds off. If we get our heart rates up to zone 5, we're ticking this box?
You are, and yeah. Very much so. The only thing I would say, that when you do the shorter VO2 max or aerobic capacity training, it's difficult to get your heart rate up in that short period of time. So don't worry, when you're doing 30 on, 30 off, it was only when I got into like set 8, set 9, I started seeing my heart rate go up, because there's a bit of a lag between your heart rate responding to the energy that you're putting out. So you're looking about 60 to 90 seconds, probably 2 minutes before you start seeing that maximum heart rate, or that heart rate going up into what is above 90% of your maximum heart rate for your VO2. So the reason I'm going through this, because if you don't have your maximum heart rate, if you don't know your maximum heart rate, it's very hard to train smartly and properly. This is going to give you the edge on other people, because, you know, you will get quicker and you will start noticing the differences. You will start noticing, actually, I'm putting muscle on. As we get older, we lose muscle. We need to do weight training. But this kind of training helps you to recover and put the muscle on. So, you know, you need to start taking this on board. So equal recovery for the pieces. Negative splitting. So, by this, does anyone know Cameron Buchanan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the thing of him on Minerva Boat Club, the 2,000 metre row he did? He did a 2,000 metre row a couple of weeks ago, 5:54, just went down training. Do it. 6'7", he's a big lad, British squad, amazing guy. But he stuck on, he negative split his 2K, and that's what they do in the national squad. So it's different. If you're doing a side-by-side racing, you want to get out in front and lead. You want to get that advantage, that psychological advantage. You want to lead. When you're doing this kind of training, it's always good to negative split. So if you're on an ergo and you're doing a five-minute piece, if you go off, and say you want to go off, you want to average at two-minute splits. If you go off at 158, 159, and you let it come out to 2 minutes, you're going to burn up. You're not going to sustain, get the recovery enough to do the next one and the next one. So what you tend to do is you tend to say, okay, I want an average of 2 minute splits. I'm going to do 201, 2 minutes, 159 at the end. So you negative split. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you start off well within yourself, because those last 2 minutes are really important that you hit maximum heart rate. So you always negative split. Now, I've got a piece on Monday I'm doing. I'm going to the World Indoor Rowing Champs in Paris next week. And I've got this piece on Monday that I'm doing, and I'm going to be negative splitting it. It's a VO2 max session. And I'll be coming down and making sure that I do that. So that it's very important with VO2 max when you're doing repeats that you negative split. Because if you go off as hard as you can holding on, you will not do the second and third piece at a high quality. So it improves your lactate threshold and VO2 max. Anyone know what the lactate threshold is? Okay, so it's the point of when you start. You have two thresholds. You have an aerobic threshold and an anaerobic threshold. Your aerobic threshold is the point where you're not producing any lactic acid. You're working aerobically. The kind of the point where you're comfortable. It's about sort of 70 to 75% of your maximum heart rate. Anaerobic threshold is where you go kind of 80 to 85% of your maximum heart rate. You start producing lactic acid. This VO2 max training helps you to recover. It recycles the lactic acid. So one of the systems that happens, that when you produce lactic acid, when your muscles are working hard, you get lactate into the blood. The body helps to recycle it. If you train that system, it helps to recycle the lactate and uses that. Lactate's not a bad thing. It uses it as energy again, so you get more energy into your body. So the more training you do of this, you kind of get a double kick there, you're feeding less lactic acid because the lactate, which is the production of lactic acid, is being recycled back into the blood and used as energy. Recycled back into the body and used as energy. Does that make sense? I'm trying to keep it as simple as I can without getting into the science of it, because if we get into the science of it, it just gets complicated, even I get confused. So, any questions on VO2 max aerobic capacity training?
How often should that be part, where, you know, during a program or cycle, how often should we be doing that?
Good question. Depends on the phase of periodization, the phase of where you are in the block of training in your season. So if you're, say, coming into the last 6 weeks of training, to say we're going to Linz, Austria, the World Masters. So in August, you'll start doing that maybe twice a week. Three times, I think, for people of our age might be asking too much, just because of the recovery phase. Younger guys, maybe three times a week. I would do this all year round, though. At least one session a week, all year round, because there are several reasons for this. Most importantly, you've got to train that system. If you ignore that system, it's use it or lose it. You don't have it. So it's going to help you in your head races. We're going to move on to lactate threshold in a minute. And lactate threshold is kind of more longer stuff, sort of a little bit lower intensity, more kind of head racing stuff. But this still improves your lactate threshold. It improves your aerobic fitness. They all work together. They complement each other. But more importantly, for people who are getting older, longevity. Okay, it's been proven that your VO2 max is linked to your longevity of life. Okay, so you've got a bigger VO2 max, you know, barring any walking across the road and getting run over by a car, or you get a terrible disease. Natural causes, bigger VO2 max, they're now starting to link with longevity. So for us old guys, it's kind of important, because if you think about it, what do the young folk do? They lift weights and they love going racing and sprinting. As we get older, we don't lift weights, and a lot of us go cycling, do long bike rides, okay, which lowers our hormone levels, so long endurance levels.
What?
Long endurance.
That explains a lot.
So as we get older, our hormone levels decrease. Estrogen, testosterone, growth hormone, there are loads of they all start to decrease. After about the age of 40, they start to come down. And as we get older, it's harder and harder to reproduce what we reproduce when we're in the 20s and 30s. Strength training and... Yes, sir?
Yeah, question. Lactic training. Would a good exercise for that be sounds a bit old school, so we're doing 500 metres, but with a very quick turnaround and doing another 500?
Yes, a bit equal rest. So 500 metres takes you 2 minutes, then you'd have 2 minutes
just
rest.
Because
you don't want to have 1 minute rest, because you won't be able to do the quality.
Okay.
But you don't want to have too long a rest where you're kind of over recovering and you're not really hitting the...
And actually by the time you've spun the boat, got yourself set, back up and do
it's
it.
It's about 2 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
And if it's 30 seconds, 30 seconds off. So if it's a 250 metre, it takes 50 seconds.
Yeah.
50 seconds on 50. So you're looking around, I would say, between 250 metres, if you're looking at rowing time, and 1,500 metres is kind of VO2 max training, repeats of. And no more than 15 minutes worth of repeats.
Yeah.
I mean, 16, 17, doesn't really matter. But no less than 5 minutes of repeats in
and
total.
And you should be doing that twice a week, sort of 6 weeks out before your major
I would say so, yeah. We're going to go to when we do those within the week.
Okay.
So hormone levels. So if you, it's now been found that if you, like triathletes, when they measure triathletes who go for crazy bike rides or cyclists who do, and we all like to get on our bike and say, should we go for a row? No, we're going to go for a long bike ride. We're going to do a 3-hour bike ride. It actually lowers your hormone levels. What stimulates your hormone levels? And like exercises, compound lifts, like squatting, deadlifts, where you're using the legs. A lot of testosterone produced by using your legs, weightlifting, and VO2 max training. It stimulates that hormone, okay? For as we get older, we need that. And that's linked with longevity as well. Any questions? I'm trying to kind of go for it because we are moving on.
Yeah, it's good.
Everyone okay?
Good.
Right. Okay. Okay, so now we're moving to lactate threshold. So lactate threshold, this is zone 4, commonly known as. Again, it's called AT. Oh, by the way, on the other slide, when it said TR, that's transportation. So transportation of oxygen is what that stands for. Lactate threshold, AT, anaerobic threshold, So they're kind of the things. And this trains your fast twitch type 2 fibers as well. Okay, so your VO2 max, you've got slow twitch, you've got and you've got two types of type 2, type 8, 2A and type 2B fast twitch fibers. So this type trains your fast twitch muscle fibers as well. When you do aerobic, you're predominantly training slow twitch, but we'll come on to that. To get your average lactate threshold heart rate, it's usually around 80 to 90% of maximum heart rate. But you could do a 5K or a 6K ergo test. So, and again, this is a slide that I was doing with some young guys. So like a guy does 5K, they're usually under 16 minutes, aren't they, the top guys? And a top woman would be under 19 minutes sort of thing, 18 and a half minutes. So for them, I always say do a 6K. For the masters, a 5K, because we're looking around a 20-minute mark, or a 4K, you know, it depends on where your 20-minute mark is. And you find your average heart rate, that's kind of your lactate threshold. I think if you're a cyclist, they call it functional threshold power. It's kind of a similar thing, yeah. So this is something you can sustain for a long period of time, helps to tolerate lactic acid in the muscles, and it helps that glycolytic system, system. So this is quite important. Not only improves the function, but regulates the number and function of glycolytic enzymes. So these are the enzymes, these are productions that happen to help you transport that kind of lactic away from your muscles. So what we're talking about, VO2 max, this does a similar thing, lactate threshold. I would say your VO2 max training is more suited towards 2,000 metre racing and 1,000 metre racing. Your lactate threshold, if you're doing a lot of head racing, so if you're doing your VEPS head of the river, this is a kind of, you want to mix a bit of this into the fold. Okay, the VO2 max strain will really help you, but this is the stuff where you get to, is it still the full boat race course, the vet said?
Yeah.
So you get to kind of Hampstead Bridge, and is it done that way or is it done the other way around?
You start with Chiswick.
Normal way?
It's done opposite to the boat race.
Putney to Chiswick. Okay, so you get to kind of like the crossover point, you're like going, you know, this is the point where you're, oh, my legs. This is the point where this kind of training really kicks in and helps you to, sorry, because your body is recycling that lactic acid over a long period of time again. A little bit kinder than VO2 max training, not so evil.
2K for twitch?
Sorry?
So I was trying to see the 20 to 40 minute duration. Is that the training for this?
Yeah, the duration. So whereas we say 5 to 15 minutes for VO2 max, for lactate threshold, we're looking 20 to 40 minutes. So, for example, a good training, how long does it take to go from bridge to bridge here?
About
20
minutes.
20 minutes. Okay, so you do 20 minutes. You have less rest. You go from top to bottom. You can rate cap it if you want to, as long as you're working within, you've got your heart rate zones, you're working within that zone. 80 to 90% of maximum heart rate. You're getting good physiological adaptations during that period, or you're going to create good physiological adaptations. Turn around, have a 5-minute break, back up again. Okay, so you're looking kind of a quarter to a third rest of the piece. You can do 3 12-minute pieces, for example. You can do 4 10-minute pieces, 5 minutes rest. That kind of training there. Yep. So that's your duration. You can also do a 40-minute flat if you wanted to. So that could be one you train like a 10K or a 8 to 10K on an ergo or something like that. So it's a good use of time as well, because all this stuff does help you with your aerobic fitness. Like I say, one system doesn't work predominantly on its own. They complement each other. The problem is we do too many of one type of training and then we're not good at the others. Yes.
Roughly
percentage-wise
is your heart rate for these people?
80 to 90%, yeah, sorry, it's just off, yeah. 80 to 90% the maximum heart rate. So this is why, again, doing that test is really important, that 5-minute ergo test with a heart rate monitor on, to find out what your maximum heart rate is. And, you know, it's that last 2 minutes. So negative split it when you're doing your VO2 max. You know, start off quite conservatively, hold it, and then that last 2 minutes really start pushing on. And you'll get it. If you start pushing on too early, you're just going to crash and burn. You'll never reach your maximum heart rate. It'd be too much. Okay, any questions on lactate threshold, zone 4? No? Okay, this is what you guys do. This is what I used to do. I hate this training. This is the worst training in the world. Okay? It's rubbish. The grey zone. That's why I put a big black hole there. Okay, the problem I've got, UT1. Okay, so a lot of you old school guys, myself included, that's how we used to, that's our steady state, UT1. We don't do UT2. UT2 is walking down, cycling down to the club. That was our UT2 training. UT1. Because we want to feel like we've worked hard when we're out there. Stupid. Zone 3. It burns a mixture of carbohydrates and fat as fuel. So the first two, the top two zones, 4 and 5, you're burning carbohydrates primarily as a source of fuel. Okay? Carbs, not fat. In here, you burn both. So what happens is you become a jack of all trades. Okay? You become not quite burning anaerobically, not quite burning aerobically, not quite burning carbohydrates, not fat. You're kind of burning both. So you're training both areas, but you're not really predominantly excelling in either. So that's the point where you want to leave this alone, because it gets you tired. You can get overtrained by doing too much of it, yet you're not getting the benefits of training a particular system. You guys have got to think, why am I doing this? Why am I coming down here and training today? What system am I training? Am I training? There are basically three systems, aren't there? There's your aerobic system, your anaerobic threshold, glycolytic system, and your anaerobic system, pure anaerobic. We don't really train pure anaerobically because it's not really involved in our sport. If our sport was 500 metres or less, I'd be talking, having a different chat with you, but it's not. Even 1,000 metres, which is a lot shorter than 2K, is still training the system, those systems, anaerobically and aerobically, the glycolytic and the aerobic zone. So by doing this sort of training, you become a jack of all trades. Yeah, I'm pretty good. I can go from top to bottom at quite a fast pace, but get me on a 2K or a 1K and I can't really get any quicker. You see, and that's the problem with it. It tires you out and you can't recover from it, and it doesn't really do you any good. Okay, it's not really training one area or the other.
I've always been quite sort of time limited in terms of training, so most of my training's normally been around like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, quite a high sort of, at that sort of threshold. Rate caps, so I tend to do like sort of 20, raising sort of 20 strokes per minute, and just, you know, sort of working at that sort of, and then just basically, you know, each week I'm just keep knocking the rate down a little bit further. I'm doing sort of, I'm doing heavy weight sessions. That tends to be sort of my training. If you're time limited, is there a sort of a certain one that you want to try and sort of focus on more?
It's a good question. I would still avoid the grey zone completely. I would.
I hate grey zone.
First of all, if you were someone who's just trying to keep fit and you wasn't trying to race, train in the grey zone, and you're time limited. Train in the grey zone. If you're someone who's just, yeah, you're doing it for fun, you want to have a bit of fitness, but you're not going to race. Because if you're going to race, your high end is not going to be high end. You're never going to get that fifth gear, that top gear. You're always going to be in third or fourth gear. Okay? And physiologically, you just won't be able to do it because you've not been training in it. If you've got limited time of training, you have to plan your week out. There are going to be times where you're going to have to train the aerobic system. You're going to have to train between 30 and 60 minutes of continuous exercise, because if you don't, you're never going to reach the potential of what you can do. And there are going to be times where you haven't got any time and you go, okay, well, I've got 15 minutes or I've got half an hour maximum. Warm up, smash out a lactate threshold or a VO2 max session, stretch, gone. Okay, so that you're going to have to, and we'll go into the aerobic system, but you're going to have to plan in an aerobic system. Now, for events that are lasting kind of rowing, 1K, 2K race, you're probably looking anywhere between 30 and 60 minutes of aerobic work. You don't have to go really over and beyond that. Okay, we're not Olympic athletes. We don't have to do 24K. And when they go out and do 24K, they're doing it because they're working on technique and they're doing lots of turns and lots of resting and they're working at a very low intensity. You don't, even the national squad don't do 24K on an ergo. They do 16K and they've got their full-time athletes. So for us, anything between 30 and 60 minutes of aerobic work is good. And we'll come into that. But yeah, I would still avoid it. Unless if you're actually rowing to keep fit, general health and fitness, and you're not worried about racing, yeah, train in the grey zone. It's not an issue because it will help you. You will get fit. But if you're looking to race and peak and you want to win races, it's not a good area to be in. So so the cyclists called it the sweet spot. Cyclists are a bit stupid, really. And you have a cyclist here. No, they are. They are. And a lot of the physiology comes from triathlon coaches, exercise physiologists who have worked with cyclists. And this is where it's all coming from. Because cyclists are even worse than rowers for going out and just smashing out the mileage. They're terrible. They do it. It's just completely... there is no science backing up. It's completely brainless work. And it's also known as black hole or tempo training. Okay, so this is the kind of... And I only do it because I've done this grey zone and I've overtrained doing this grey zone. Okay, and I have overtrained. It took me 9 months to get out of bed again when I did do it. So I've got experience of where it is.
It's a real big frustration. Most of us probably find is you do a lot of grey zone training and then don't get any faster and you get totally pissed off at your rowing.
Yeah, so you're with the grey zone, it's a really good point actually. With the grey, you'll get to a certain point of fitness and then you'll stay there. And you always feel like, when you race your 1K at the regattas, I'm still going the same speed as what I was going at the heads. I haven't pushed on.
I think that's the point where people then start blaming other people in the boat and their
technique. Yeah, or they could look at themselves. So, yeah. So just going back to your bit short of time, I put ideal for those short of time because it works both the aerobic and anaerobic systems. But the problem with it being short of time is that you become a jack of all trades, you don't become good. If you're a marathon runner, you don't want to do it because you want to train your aerobic system. If you're a 2,000 metre or 1,000 metre rower, you don't want to do it because you want to train both systems. You want to be good in both areas, not in the middle. Right, and I put dangerous becoming average of both systems. Better to train in zones 2, 4 and 5 for maximum performance. And you can train too hard. It's too hard for aerobic. It's too easy for threshold. It's usually 30 to 60 minutes of duration. And here's the key, 70 to 80% of your maximum heart rate. So, for example, for me, my area is, I think it's 1-3. If I'm training between... It's not. I actually would change that 70 to 80% because I was talking to another group. But in actual fact, I think up to 75% you're okay. I think it's the 75 to 85% area that you want to avoid training in. That 75 to 85% area. Because 85% and above, you're going to lactate threshold, VO2 max. That 75 to 80, it's around the 80% mark where people tend to train. And I bet you guys that do your top to bottom, if we put a heart rate monitor on there, you'll be at that 80%. You won't be quite hard enough that you're in the lactate threshold, but not easy enough that it's a paddle. You feel knackered at the end, but like you could have maybe gone a bit harder. So, and for me, it's around kind of like pulse rate 130 to about 145, that kind of around that pulse rate that I avoid. So I do all my training sub 130. Bearing in mind my maximum is 173. All my training sub 130 for my aerobic. So between kind of 115 and 130 or 121 and 130, something like that. And anything above, for me, 146, 147, I do those two areas, those two parts of the training. I don't train in that grey zone. Any questions on the grey zone? No?
I know it well.
Yeah, well, you're a cyclist, and if you're a cyclist going out, then you're a weekend warrior, and you're going out cycling, training in the grey zone. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It gets you fit, gets you out of the house. Sorry?
I said there's good cake in the grey zone.
There's good cake in the grey zone, but if you're trying to perform, and I guess we're here because you guys want to go and perform well and compete well. You're all rowers and you're all competitive and you want to do well. So that's why I'd avoid it. So that brings us on lovely to the aerobic threshold, UT2. This is probably what you all think you do, and probably most of you train in the UT1 zone, the grey zone. So this burns fat as fuel, and it spares your glycogen. So that what it does, it teaches the... I'm not going to read my notes, I'm actually going to go off what I think here. They are... By burning fat, you become more efficient when you're racing at a high level. Okay, so when you race at a high level, the body will predominantly use carbohydrates, glycogen from the muscles, as a source of fuel. If your fat fat adaptive, i.e. you're training at a low rate, you're using a higher percentage of fat for your energy. When you race at a high level, you use your carbohydrates sparingly. And also, having the aerobic threshold or your zone 2 training in peak condition means that when you're racing your 1,000 metres and you're producing lactate from lactic acid, the system, the aerobic system, is the system that takes that lactate and recycles it as energy. So you might find some people like CrossFitters, I train a lot of CrossFitters who are anaerobically really fit and they want to get into indoor rowing and they sit alongside me and they're twice the size of me and we do like a, we might do a step like a 500, 400, 300, 200, 100 and back up again. And then 500, they're there with me. 400, a little bit in front of me, then they start to burn. Then they go again at the 100. On the way back up, they're like 20 seconds behind me because they've got a great anaerobic system, but they've built up so much lactic acid, they never train aerobically, their body can't recycle it. My body's going, taking it up, yep, putting it back in, taking it up, mopping up that lactic acid, putting it back into the system, using it as energy. I can keep going. That's what the aerobic system does. Do too much of it, and you end up, you can never get out of that gear. And then you can't race. And so as rowers, we're probably quite, we shy away from the really hard stuff until it's race season. And then it's too late. We've left it too late. We're doing our race. Why are we training our VO2 max and our lactate threshold training when we should have been doing it all year round? We just do it in different percentages as we get near the race. So this is a great place to train in. It's your base training, known as cardio, aerobic threshold, aerobic UT2. Develops the slow twitch muscle fibers and the capillaries, so it helps the capillaries with the blood flow to the muscles, bringing more blood to the muscles, more oxygen, more fuel. So what I put, creates pathways for blood and therefore oxygen and fuel, fat. So the fat, so when you're burning the fat up, obviously getting leaner, looking better. And the body. Look at Joe. Joe's been doing a bit of it. So you know, you're burning fat as a fuel, predominantly as a fuel. You're still using carbohydrates as well, depending on how high the percentages of the heart rate. I put 60 to 70%. I would say you can go up to 75% of maximum heart rate at this zone, which is fine. Remember, 75% is the higher end. You get 75, 76%, you start into that grey zone. So you want to stay... I kind of... seems to be around 72% of maximum heart rate. So I would do, like, if I did a 60-minute erg, I'd be around 72% of the maximum heart rate for that whole period of time. I did one yesterday, and I set up, and I was like, yeah, I'm feeling quite chunky here, and this is where you've got to be disciplined. Because I started off, and my splits were... I was keeping it at 70, 72% of maximum heart rate. My splits were, like, 157, something like that, and I was feeling quite chunky, nice 17, 18 strokes a minute. By the end of it, because of cardiac drift. Anyone know what cardiac drift is? It's
gradually gets heart rate.
Yeah, so your core temperature gets hotter, your heart's having to work harder to pump fuel. Yeah. Okay, so what would happen would that by the end of the piece, I think I was hitting 205 splits. Now, the old Tony would have gone, what the hell's going on? Entering the grey zone, okay? And then I'm not getting the adaptation I'm looking for. Yesterday, I was working the aerobic system, zone 2. I wanted to work my aerobic system so when I'm racing next week, I've got a big enough aerobic system that's going to take that lactic acid away from my body when I'm racing.
So one of the biggest challenges for me is getting some of the younger guys in my squad to do that and not get bored and then suddenly want to sort of, you know, like just as you're describing, kind of like, oh, this feels a bit easy, I should be dripping sweat everywhere, and then they just go for it. Any top tips for, I think, keeping them controlled?
If you explain to them, first of all, explaining to them about how the systems work and how by doing this, you say, you know when you get that burn when you're racing, this helps that burn to disappear. I mean, that's music to somebody's ears, anyone, any age. The other thing is to break the long, steady state into aerobic intervals with smaller rest so they can concentrate for longer. Okay. So there's nothing wrong with doing this. I I don't suffer from any back problems. I'm very lucky. So I can do a long, and I just switch off. I can do a long, long piece. But some people can't. So some people that I train, they do 4-15 minutes with maybe 60 to 90 seconds rest in between. Or if it's a, if it's not 60 minutes, if it's a 40-minute piece, you might do 4-10 minutes. You just break it down. 10 minutes is kind of, you don't want to go lower than 10 minutes.
So you do sort of 4 times 15 minutes, and then how long do you break on that one?
About 90 seconds for them to have some water, have a quick chat. Another good way of doing it as well is getting to focus technically on parts of whatever they're doing in the boat. So whether it's square blade, whether it's the catch, the finish, the drive, the depth of the blade, whatever you're trying to do, working in different slide controls, body position. Whatever it is, get them to focus and then break that 10 minutes into a focus point of technique. Stop, water, right, we've done that, we're moving on now. We've been working on the catch, the front end, now we're going to work on the second part of the drive. So then that's your second part, and then you can work on mid-drive and then finish. That's your 4-10 minutes or 4-15 minutes.
It's always a discipline though, isn't it? So if you've got a higher end monitor on, you know when you're getting to the top of that zone and you either make that conscious decision to back off, as you did, as you say, yesterday, or push on. So I think one of the ways that we got it working quite well was posting the heart rate with a screenshot of the ERT and saying, yeah, there's my hour, my 3x20 minutes, and that was my average and max heart rate. So the people who clearly went into the ET1 zone in order to get a better score, it was very apparent from the heart rate average.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And one of the guys that I train with, he posts to me, and his average heart rate for an aerobic zone is 155, and he's the guy I spoke, the CrossFitter, but he's training in the aerobic zone. So it's good that you say, but he says this is 74% of my maximum heart rate. So it's good that they put that, because otherwise, especially young people, start comparing heart rates because of figure. You got to say what percentage it is. Any other questions on this aerobic threshold? So lung capacity and stroke volume. Does anyone know what stroke volume is?
Is that your heart?
Yeah. Yeah, blood you can pump a beat through to the through the body. Yeah, so the stronger the stroke volume, the more blood you can pump through, the more
energy. Many years ago, I did that show, and since Penny Shooter was saying, it's, if you're keeping your heart rate down, your body adapts to what you're training it to do. If you keep your heart rate down, your heart actually starts pumping bigger volume for the same rate.
She was ahead of her time, Penny Shooter. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about stroke volume, and going back to the intervals, the aerobic intervals, this is really important, and it's just coming out now. They've only just done research on cyclists, but they were looking at stroke volume. Yes.
That's all my
good for. Take your top off, Phil. Yeah.
They're always in the waist, like this, aren't they? No, we love them.
The laboratory rat.
Exactly. They're the laboratory rats. They're lovely. Just feed them and give them a bike and they're happy. But, so with cyclists, they did some aerobic intervals as to steady state, and steady state, I mean continuous. And there were these professional cyclists, it's only just come out as research, and it was a 30-minute duration. They did one group, they were in a transition phase of their block training. It was after their competition. They didn't worry about what level they were getting to. They were just keeping very strictly to the heart rate. 30 minutes or 3 10s. They did it 5 times a week, I think for 5 weeks or 6 weeks. Then they measured stroke volume before, stroke volume after. They found, this is only 3 10s, it's only 30 minutes, okay, of exercise at the aerobic zone. With the stroke volume, you want your stroke volume to be as powerful as possible per beat, okay? Because when you're pumping that blood around, remember that blood is sending energy, taking the lactic acid, all the systems working. So the stronger the stroke volume, the easier it is to race at a high level. The stroke volume of the guys that did 3 10s, I think they had 5 minutes rest, and they were questioning whether that's too much rest because they were losing other adaptations. So they're looking around sort of 60 to 90 seconds. That they haven't got the results of that yet, but on the 5 minute rest, there I think it was 8-point-something% of stroke volume had increased. Those that had done steady state, their stroke volume only increased by 2-point-something%. So there's a big difference between those that had done the aerobic interviews and intervals and those that did the steady state. And that meant to me that it means that during those 3 10s, you can concentrate and put more power down, so more demand, without that cardiac drift come into place. That cardiac drift comes into play after about 10-11 minutes. That's when your cardiac drift comes in. And then you can rest then you can hit it again, more stroke volume, because you're producing more power, rest, left cardiac, so there's no cardiac drift. And I can understand physiologically why that would happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but that's new. So it might be, you know, I might come in here in 12, 18 months' time saying, don't do steady state. Or it might be that that was just one research paper. There needs to be more research done on it. But it may be in future that aerobic intervals is the way forward as opposed to a long steady state. And also mentally, it's quite refreshing. Right, moving on. Strength training.
There I am.
I didn't lift that way, I just put them all on. Take a picture. No, that was me just doing some arm curls from Joe's deadlifts. So strength training. How many of you guys and girls do strength training? One? Two? Three? Three out of, what, we've got 20 years? Joe started doing strength training. So, yeah, massively important. Massively, especially for us oldies. It's so important because as we get older, we lose muscle mass, hormones. They dictate our muscle mass production. We lose bone density, tendon ligament weakness. Posture goes, if our posture and strength goes in the boat, our technique goes. It's a big no-no. This thing is so important. It's right the way through the season and you'll continue it. And so I'm racing on Saturday in Paris. My last strength training session will be Tuesday. Okay? So I won't do anything. It gives me time to recover. By Saturday, I'll be fully recovered. Young people take about, and I say young people, sort of kind of like in their 20s, 30s, take about 48 hours to recover from a strength training session. When we're slightly older, about 72 hours. So I would say two sessions a week, probably good, with a good, at least 72 hours. So I do mine usually on a Tuesday and a Friday or a Monday and a Thursday, my strength weights. I do compound lifts. So compounds, anyone know what compounds are?
So you're doing, say, rather than just doing so leg extensions, you have to do
squat. Yeah. So if I'm doing a squat with a bar on my back and I'm going right the way down and right the way back up, I'm using glutes, hamstrings, quads, core, upper back. If I'm doing a leg extension, I'm just working my VMO, which is the inside of my quad. I'm just working that muscle there. Or a bicep curl is an example of kind of like an isolated exercise. A compound movement is like a deadlift. What I'm doing there, I'm picking up the bar and I'm coming up to here. I'm using so many different muscles, a power clean, a clean and jerk, the Olympic lift, squats, bench press. They are compound lifts. They're the things that stimulate the hormones. Now, I don't do, with all my clients, I don't do any isolated exercises unless they're coming back from injury or they're bodybuilders. And I do train a couple of bodybuilders. Everybody else, whether they're athletes or just general public, will do compound lifts. Okay, very, very important. They stimulate hormone growth. So, how's it going to make you go faster in the boat? The big thing there, you apply more force per stroke. So every time you put in a blade in the water and you're pushing off the foot stretcher, there is more force. If you're producing more force, your muscles are stronger, you're using less energy. You're going to get over the course quicker. Okay, because you're going to be more fresher. Injury prevention, big one. Joe's come back, hopefully be back rowing soon, because he's got a bad back, because he does cycling. My dad was a pro cyclist. He tried to get me into it. I don't want to get on a boat. Injury prevention, big one. Big one for injury prevention. As rowers, what do we... I'm thinking this area here, what do we predominantly overwork and what do we predominantly not work?
Quads and back overworked.
Cool.
Glutes, hamstrings, core and
back. Bang on. Oh, he's a man. Yeah. So, if you look at my quads, they're ridiculous. I've got massive quads because I've rowed all my life or played football. Massive quads, stupid. And then wondered why I started to get niggles in my back. And I looked and I had no hamstrings or no glutes. I had a hinge. Has your partner ever said you've got a hinge, you don't have a bum? Yeah. So, by squatting, by going beyond a 90 on a squat, so you go deep, you're at least parallel with your thighs to the floor, you go beyond, you engage the hamstrings and the glutes. These areas help to balance you out and protect your muscles. You don't really use them that much in rowing. You predominantly use the quads. Now, you do use them in rowing, but you don't predominantly use the quads. That's where the power is generated. When you're rowing technically, here you go, coach, do you ever get them to use push off the heels?
Try to, yeah.
Yeah. And the reason we do that as coaches, the reason we ask our athletes to push off the heels, it's not just some new fancy thing that Mahi Drysdale said and was really good. It's because when we push off our heels, as when we're doing a squat, we use our hamstrings and glutes. Now, if I'm in a sculling boat or an eight and I'm pushing off my toes, fine, I'm predominantly using my quads. But if I push off more of a flatter foot, especially as I come through the stroke, halfway through the stroke, I'm engaging my hamstrings and glutes, which means I'm getting more force through the stroke. Okay, so another reason, not just injury prevention, but another reason to lift weights. Going back to injury prevention, overdeveloped quads, tight back, tight core, because you're always in that position, weak back, back injuries, knee injuries, because your quads are overdeveloped, you have an underdeveloped VMO, because you never really lock out your knee, do you, at the finish? It's always a little bit soft in the knee at the finish. You never... Not like another sports like cycling, where you do kind of get, maybe in cycling you don't get a lot, do you? Football, I guess you do. But so you get knee issues, you tend to get lower back issues, sometimes shoulder issues, because overdeveloped upper back, underdeveloped pectoral muscles. Okay, so again, shoulder injury is another one with rows. Tight necks, bad necks, bit of pain up here in the higher cervical region, you know, all that kind of thing. So you've got to lift your weights, and they're fun. They're fun, they really are. And the hardest thing when I'm coaching rowers lifting weights is they go, right, what are we doing next? Squats, what are we doing next? No, it's not an endurance. I'm working strength. I'm not working VO2 max. I'm not working lactate threshold. I'm not working aerobically. We've done those sessions. We're working strength. That's the only system we're working today. So when I do strength training, I will get them to do, depending on the block of the phase of this, whether I'm doing hypertrophy, which means muscle, building muscle, where I'm doing strength training or power training, what phase of the block of the training is in, that training will consist of maximum recovery. So I'm looking anywhere between, depending on the lift, if it's a squat, I'm looking around 2 to 3 minutes recovery. If it's a deadlift, 2 to 3 minutes, maybe a bench press, less compound, still big compound, maybe 90 seconds recovery, but a good recovery. You know, I'd say most of my recovery is between 2 and 3 minutes per set. And I will do 3 to 5 sets. And the reps, depending on early, doing adaptations early, anatomical adaptations, we call it, I'll be doing up to 15 reps. As we move through the year, that rep range will drop and you'll get stronger. But we start you off light, building the muscle, hypertrophy, get the muscle, strength, power as we move through the season. Okay, improves hormone release. We said about the hormones in using the legs. Core strength, improved bone density, tendon, ligament, muscle strength, mobility. So improved mobility. I mean, how many? I'm going to pick on cyclists again and runners. How many cyclists and runners do you see that kind of walk like this? They have lack of mobility because they don't go through the full range of movement. As rowers, we are exactly the same. We don't go through the full range of movement. So a lot of rowers are like this. Okay. And it improves that kind of posture and that mobility. So if I get most rowers to do a squat, it'd be really interesting actually to see you guys do it now. Actually, everyone get up and just do a squat. Just do a bodyweight squat. Just do a few of them. How many of you are struggling to get your, I want you try and get your legs at 90 degrees, if not sit a bit low, but keep your heels on the floor. And not look like you're having a greyhound having a poo. Look at you, look, greyhound having a poo, greyhound having a poo, greyhound having a poo. Sorry, I didn't see that, so look at... Greyhound having a poo. It's natural, no, it's natural. We all are, because we all do too much lumbar flexion, because we're tight in the hips. Weight helps you with the mobility. I don't know, one row that can come down, you try to get a row doing an overhead, this is another exercise that we get head above their overhead squat without bringing their arms forward. You've got a weight above your bar and you get down to deep squat. Most people come forward because they don't have the mobility or flexibility. Weight is fantastic for mobility. You'll be amazed how it helps you, isn't it?
Yeah, appreciate it.
I mean, you've been doing, what, 6-8 weeks now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the difference it's made to Joe. You've got to do it. And I hated weights when I was young because weights took me off the river. I don't want to do weights when I get on a river. But I see the importance of it, and it's, you have to include it into your thing. And it includes your lean body mass, so when you go on holiday, you look...
now we're talking interesting
stuff. There's a motivation for you.
It does increase it, your bone. You do start to notice things that have been sagging for a few years. It does, doesn't it, Joe? Everyone thinks Joe's wearing a corset. Right? It's not.
Are you still recording this?
Oh God, yeah. Sorry. All right. He's not my partner, just for recording. Okay, so we've moved any questions on training. So what's the area we want to avoid?
Grey zone.
Gray.
Which is what percentage of heart rate, roughly?
75 to 80.
Yeah, 75 to 80%, around that kind of area. If we want to train, whether it's a lactate threshold or VO2 max, it is 85% to 100%. And if we want to train aerobically, it's 75% to about 65 to 75%. I roughly around 72 is kind of somewhere in the middle is good. If you do VO2 max, what's the maximum duration or the kind of range of duration that you would have in the VO2 max?
5 to 15.
So you break that into like 30 seconds or 10, 30 seconds with equal rest. And then with your lactate threshold, which is the zone 4, what's that kind of duration?
It's like the 5K, the 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 to 40 minutes. Yeah. And you can do repeats of that as long as it's between 20 and 40 minutes, total duration. Okay, nutrition. Now, this is the big one with rowers. How many of you still have bowls of pasta in between? Are we all past that stage now? Or you go for like a donut or something? Or
a hamburger.
And anyone, I mean, how are people's diets here? Because I don't want to sort of like go up, bang on about it if your diet's all pretty good.
Well, I do still eat pasta. Is that?
To the biscuits in the middle, probably.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it? Okay, macronutrients. So macronutrients just break down protein, carbohydrates and fats and what percentage that you should have in it. Back in the day, so back in the 80s and 90s, especially in the 90s, it was all like low fat, wasn't it? Low fat, low fat, low fat. Fat is really bad. It's not. If fat's really good for you, you need fat. But it was all high carbs, high refined carbs, pasta. I mean, I was told to eat pasta until I was blue in the face. I've now got an underactive thyroid gland and I'm gluten intolerant. The underactive thyroid, and I'm sure it's linked to my diet in the 90s that I had, and now I've reversed it, and I've noticed that my bloods are changing, and I'm actually starting to, does anyone know what biohack is? Biohack's when you do certain things to your body to try and change what's happening, biological hacks to your body. So I'm trying to biohack my body with my diet by changing my diet, completely turning it around, and my bloods are coming back, and my underactive thyroid, I'm starting to have to reduce my medication. So, and they said that I'll be on a pill for the rest of my life, and I'm going to prove them wrong. So these are things that you need to bear in mind about what foods can do to your body. Gluten intolerance. If I eat gluten now, my stomach swells up. I don't know how many of you eat bread or pasta or cakes, and if you eat too much of it, your stomach, you feel it swells up, and you maybe you go to the toilet a bit too often, or you have bloatedness or a bit of stomach cramps. That's a gluten intolerance. What happens when you eat gluten, I'm just diversifying a bit here with what we're doing, but when you eat gluten, it's got two proteins in it. One is glutenine and the other one is, it's the evil one. Come to you in a minute. Anyway, one of those peptides, it reacts with the gut lining of the wall, and as a result, have you heard of leaky gut? Mm-hmm. Leaky gut or gut permeability. What happens is that it creates small kind of holes in the gut wall line where waste products that would naturally go through its natural and go to the toilet would get leaked into the blood, and the body will attack them, autoimmune diseases, because now you've got these toxins in the blood, and the you've got these great big white blood cells, like these Arnold Schwarzeneggers, with these great, like Joe and, you know, his great guns, you remember Arnold Schwarzenegger and all that kind of thing, you're waiting there to destroy his toxins, and they congregate in an area. So for me, it was my thyroid gland, and that's where, because that's my presuspicion, that's where I'm going to feel it. Some people, it could be rheumatoid arthritis. Other people, it can be colitis. There are some people have celiac disease. There are a number of autoimmune diseases. Eczema is another one that they link with this issue with gluten. Okay, and then what happens is that your white blood cells, they kill the toxins, but they don't discriminately just kill the toxins, they kill everything inside, and they will destroy everything inside. So gluten does take its biologically and chemically, it does link up very much to a lot of other molecules that we produce in the body, and the white blood cells don't care if you're wearing black or red, it's going to shoot both of you. So it starts destroying itself. And that's why, and I think it's something called glyphosate, which is one of the big causes, which is a pesticide that they use, that they spray on the crops. And I don't know if any of you have been to France or Italy and had bread and you've been perfectly fine, you come back to England and eat bread and you go, oh, I was fine, I had that French loaf in France and it's fine. I'm the same. But in France, if you buy a French loaf in the morning, what happens by the afternoon? It's gone, isn't it? Because they've got nothing, it's pure. The flour's proper. In Bath, they got a Bertinet place that they, if I eat their bread, I don't get a stomachache because the flour he uses. So you have to be careful with what you eat and how you eat it. I stay away from bread, cake, I don't eat it. Carbohydrates are still quite high up there, but my carbohydrates, I'm going to move this on a bit. Here we go. My carbohydrates are the preferred source of fuel, so we need to make sure we carb up. But when we're training at a low intensity, remember we're using a lot of fat as well. But the healthy carbs, they stabilise your blood sugar and curb cravings. So healthy. Does anyone know what healthy carbs there are? Anyone think of carbohydrate source that's healthy? We talked about grains. Okay, so there are healthy grains, I would argue, aren't healthy. I have, the only grains that I have are brown or wild rice and gluten-free porridge. I know porridge, oats are gluten-free, but if they get milled in the same place as where they mill wheat, you get cross-contamination, so that's why you have to go for gluten-free. But apart from the grains, those grains I mentioned, anyone got any idea of carbohydrates? They're sugars, carbohydrates are sugars.
Potatoes,
yeah, potato. Believe it or not, there's less sugar in sweet potato than there's a normal potato.
Really?
So yeah, sweet potato, broccoli, spinach, all your green vegetables, all vegetables, are very full of carbohydrates and fruits. That's why there's blackberries up there. That was your clue. Okay, berries are very low in sugar for fruits compared with some of the fruits. But you know, I wouldn't eat too much fruit. I don't eat too much fruit, but I would eat quite a lot of vegetables. So I would base my diet, my plate of vegetables, and then I'll add I kind of a meat and veg man, and that's what I wear. I have my food.
What about Weet-Bix?
Oh,
so I have 3 weeks.
Do you know the grey zone?
Yeah.
That's where I put Weet-Bix. It's a wheat. It's a processed sugar. I mean, the only difference between the sugars, if you go on the glycemic index, you look at wheat, how high, it's a red flag. Glycemic index, you know what that is? Okay, so if you're pre-diabetic, they tell you to go on a low GI diet. Of course, a low GI diet is the best diet you can go on, in my opinion. But
my breakfast is normally 3 weeks, a glass of orange juice.
Ooh.
Oh, he must be a cyclist.
Not cyclists.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, fruit juice is the devil. If you're going to have fruit, have fruit, whole fruit. It's got fibre in it. It slows everything down. Otherwise, I could talk for 4 or 5 hours on this subject, and I'm not going to. But yeah, insulin levels get raised, pancreas, pre-diabetic, not good. Okay, so orange juice, like Coca-Cola, kick it out of touch. Do not have water or a cup of tea or something, you know. Do not. But yes, stay away from, you shouldn't really drink orange juice, or you shouldn't really eat Weet-Bix. Sorry.
What's
a good breakfast? Eggs, apple pie, orange. Porridge with nuts in there, some protein, slow the whole process down.
Yeah.
beans, we asked that. Lagoons. Okay, so lagoons have kind of got, yeah, they are very good. The problem
is slightly debased, don't they?
They are. The problem with eating them is we eat too many of them. They've got something called phytic acid in them. And phytic acid stops the absorption of other nutrients in your body. So vegetarians, I've got a lot of clients who are vegetarians or vegans. And I don't like people taking protein shakes and that. Yeah, so I don't like people taking protein shakes, but I have to allow them. We have natural source of protein shakes that they can take because they can't get enough protein. And I don't want to eat too many legumes because it stops the nutrition of other foods being absorbed. It's just because we eat too many lentils. I mean, how do you have a bowl of lentils, don't you? In a wild, if you think yourself as really were wild animals, you were hunting, you wouldn't have all those lentils in one bar. So, yeah, it's the phytic acid, I'm afraid, that causes the issues. And then we've got FODMAPs and high low FODMAP, but I'm not going to go into that. A cellular food. Does anyone know what that is? Clues there.
Vegetables?
No, it's the opposite. It's
acellular.
Sorry, anything that's been refined, okay, cellular foods is what you want to go for. Vegetables, whole fruit, legumes, as we said, but in moderation.
It's still got a cellular structure.
Yeah, exactly. Potatoes and whole grains. And with whole grains, I mean, I don't include wheat as a whole grain. I think, for me, wheat is a man-made grain that was, 10,000 years ago, I think it was produced. And it's been... what was it, in the Far East, and it's been bound and copied and put together and genetically modified over the centuries, so that the grain that our grandparents were eating is not the grains that we're eating today, because they're just perfectly been crossbred. And now those long, wavy wheat plants that you saw in the... You remember the Bounty adverts? Mm-hmm. I used to love those adverts. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But you don't see them anymore. They're all that high, aren't they? Because they produce more seeds. And their resistance to frost and everything else, because they've been genetically modified, regardless of what you've been told. Okay, they do get modified. Anyway, so carbohydrates are very important. Fats are really good. Fats got a bad press, and you need to have fats, but healthy fats. I'm not talking about donuts and cakes and things. There are monounsaturated fats, your omega-3s and 6s, 9s you're trying to produce. There are other omegas, but they're the important ones. We get quite a lot of 6s in the world. They're kind of things like red meat you find in and other things. We don't have enough 3s. Ideally, you want a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-3 and omega-6. We don't. We have like a more of a kind of, I think in America, they have a 1-to-15 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. And it's really bad for us. We need that omega-3, cellular, keeping the cellular strong, cellular wall lining.
So oily fishes.
Oily fishes, yeah. So we've got a list down here of omega-3s, which is avocado, chia seeds, dark chocolate. Which I think is more omega-6, but it's a really healthy fat.
Yeah.
Oh, I love dark chocolate, but it's got to be dark, 85% and above. Eggs, fatty fish, flaxseed nuts, nut butter, olives, olive oil, tofu, and yogurt. So, I mean, yogurt and dairy is another whole subject. We'll talk about that. Some people are lactose intolerant, but that's lactose intolerant, but that's another thing. Any questions on fats?
What about cheese?
Cheese, who asked that? Yeah, cheese in moderation. Hard cheese rather than soft cheese. Probably better for you.
Not too much
moderation. Any saturated fats in excess is going to be bad for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why you have omega-3 unsaturated and polyunsaturated. They help balance out the body. So you want to be careful with having too much of that. Okay. And essential for hormone function. So us old people need more of these kind of fats to keep the hormone function working correctly. Any questions on fats? All right, so protein. Anyone tell me what sort of protein foods there are?
Steak.
Meat. Fish.
Fish, steak, yeah.
Pulses,
yeah.
Dairy.
Bread.
Yeah, there's protein in bread. There's protein in porridge, but kind of less so than more kind of carbohydrates. So they're the building blocks. That's what we need to eat for to repair our bodies. Every night when we go to sleep, our bodies repair, hormones kick in, body repair. If we don't have enough protein in our diet, then we can't get the maximum benefit from sleep and recovery. So very essential for rowing, because every time you go out and train, you're breaking the body down. Your body's trying to get back to homeostasis, which is when it gets back to its normal relaxed feeling. And by using that, it needs to break down the body at night and rebuild. Okay. So I'm sorry, I'm just going to skip through because
we do have to wrap up in a minute. Actually,
yeah. So this is coming right to the end. Sleep, rest, and recovery. How many hours of sleep do people get per night? Those are about six, seven, eight, nine.
Seven, eight.
Okay, so you're really looking about, if you're training, about 8 to 9 hours of sleep per night. You need that to get your body fully rested and recuperated. Now, people are different. There are some people got some genes where they can actually sleep for 4 or 5 hours, and I think they've identified the gene recently, what it is in people that can sleep and feel fine the next day. But as they get older, they have some sort of kind of nervous function damage they're finding out, because they don't get the rest and recuperation that they should be getting. So they can function properly, but there's a long-term effect to not being well. So for you guys, 8 or 9 hours of sleep is kind of, you know, you need to be getting a 24-hour clock, you need to be getting that. Potential for body repair, hormone balance, improved concentration, weight management. Lowers the risk of heart disease, improved mental health, lower inflammation, and helps your immune system. I'll come back to this one in questions. Any questions on sleep and recovery? So I'm going to expand on it in a little bit. All right, so one of the things that you need to do before you go to sleep at night is you need to make sure that you limit your blue light getting into your body. Does anyone know what about blue light?
Screens.
Yeah.
Sunlight, yeah, anything like that. Dim the lights, have red lights, brown lights, dim the lights, no blue lights, so those overhead spotlights on a dimmer, turn them down. None of this stuff in your bedroom, okay, that has to stop. Not on your phone, so I don't go on my phone past 8 o'clock, so if a client's going to cancel or be late or something for the next day, then they need to let me know before 8 o'clock, because I won't usually be on my phone after 8 o'clock. 2 hours before I usually cut it back, because it does affect my sleep. Another one is having a cold shower. If I get to sleep. Mm-hmm. Been doing it every day now for about 4 months. It's good. I've got Joe on it.
Yeah.
And it's good for you because it lowers your core body temperature, and you should have the windows open. The room needs to be cool for you to sleep in. You need to be cool. When you're cool, you fall asleep. If you're hot, you will not fall asleep. You know, it's hot, sunny summer nights when you can't get sleep, that's one of the reasons why. Okay, so cold showers also very good for brown fat mobilization. Anyone know what brown fat is? Brown fat is you're born with it. There are now research saying you can grow it still, and it mobilizes to burn white fat, to burn the stuff around love handles around your hips or whatever. And by having to keep your body warm, it's kind of like a safety net. So you're born so much brown fat. If you have a cold shower, that stimulates your brown fat to burn off the white fat. And also, that's another reason for having cold water showers. And then CBD. Has anyone heard of CBD? Cannabis. Uh-huh. Cannabis is good. But not the type you're thinking of.
I just looked at the policeman in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. It is good cannabis, but not the legal type. The legal type. So CBD is, and I forget what it stands for. Can anyone help me out here? Can you help me out as well? Because THC is the illegal stuff, which is the stuff that you smoke and get high on. Okay, but CBD is when they, if you put two female plants together, they produce THC, which produces the drug for cannabis. But if you have a male and female plant, it doesn't produce so much of it, and it produces CBD. CBD helps fight inflammation and helps to lower your cortisol levels. By lowering your cortisol levels, which fight or flight hormone, you go to sleep. So your hormone levels, your cortisol levels, are highest around lunchtime, and then through the day they start to go down. So I don't know if you find that you get a slump as you go into the afternoon and the evening, you're kind of, and then you wake up at 7 o'clock, you're in 8 o'clock, you're kind of like ready to go again, and then by 12 o'clock, so the best time to train is kind of around lunchtime, because that's when your cortisol levels are the highest, and then they come down. So CBD, it lowers your cortisol levels, but you've got to be careful where you get your CBD from, and that they've got a shop in Bath, they would do, but you've got to be careful where you get it from and so forth, and because there are a lot of CBD out there, but it has to have less than 1% of the cannabis drug that you smoke in it, so you won't get high on it. But there are different hacks, then these are called biohacks you can do to help you get to sleep. So lowering your cortisol levels is another way. And the most important thing is, finally, that for longevity and healthy life, and then look at these blue zone areas. Do you know what I mean by blue zone areas? Where people live the longest. So there's like places in the Mediterranean, Japan, they look at their diet and what they have, and they've got all these different reasons. Right? The main reason why people, the scientists think, live in these blue zone areas is for one reason and one reason only. It is the diet, it is the sleep, it is their low in their cortisol levels, so they don't have stressful lives, they're not trying to do too many things at once. Got to get over here, got to do this, got to do that. But mainly because they have a supportive network of friends and family around them. And that's the most important thing. If you've got good friends and, you know, you've got this rowing club, this lovely rowing club here, you're all friends here, and you've got a good supportive network around here, around you, that is essential for longevity, okay, and health. So just bear that in mind. Any questions?
Yeah, I was just concerned in your recommended foods, I didn't see the word alcohol.
Good point. So alcohol is not a bad thing in moderation. You can have, for example, a shot. I won't be this week, but usually I have a shot of rum or a shot of whiskey every night. Well, my partner, she says it's more like kind of three shots. But I cook. I like cooking. So when I get home, I will put, you know, whiskey or rum, maybe that much in there, and I will drink it. And that kind of amount is okay. You've actually got something called prebiotics where your gut bacteria feeds off certain foods. And alcohol, things like whiskey or rum, spirits or wine, is one of them, as long as you don't overdo it and you destroy your gut bacteria.
Thanks for that talk, Tony. It's really quite useful. I think it sounds like overall, it's sort of one thing we're probably not doing as much of that we should be doing is the strength training. But I was going to ask you about, I mean, obviously at the moment we're looking at several head races. We are doing a reasonable amount of training, but I often thought that, is there anything we can do? I mean, when we go in the water, we try to warm up reasonably well. When we do the circuits, we try and stretch and warm up. We go to a head race, we can sit there for an hour at the start, all of a sudden it's 4 miles flat out. When you get older, it's harder to make that change from sat there getting quite cold sometimes, sort of flat out. I think, is there a technique you think we could use to sort of improve that? Is there anything we can do?
I mean, if you lift weights, you're going to have more muscle mass. If you've got more muscle mass, you're going to produce more heat. So you're going to be warmer generally. But actually, sort of like tactics to be up there and what you would do, whenever I did a head race and I had a half an hour wait till I got going and I was freezing cold, I would tend to, just tactics, I would actually have like a carrier bag and the thing, and I would actually go up there and I would have like a hat, pogies, a scarf, yeah, and nothing, and I'd actually warm up, get to the top, and then I would actually get changed. I'd take my, because my top would be a bit wet from sweating, I'd take it off and put my race top on and everything over the top and then just kept warm. But really, and if you've got a flask, you know, it's like a small flask you can get now with some hot drink in there, might be with maybe some sugars in there to keep you kind of going, might help, but it's very difficult. I mean, it's a silly system really, the way they do it, but there's no way around it, is there?
I guess not.
But weight training is really important. I mean, you have to lift. We have to, without because we're all very sedentary with our lifestyles now, we have to lift.
Great message. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time.
That's brilliant.